1-888-805-6477, nhpr.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The town meeting, often called the purest form of democracy, and for more than three centuries, it was how New Hampshire local government was conducted. Residents would gather on the second Tuesday in March, a convenient downtime for farmers and loggers. They'd deliberate for hours on budgets and do a fair bit of knitting and socializing as well. But over the last few decades, attendance at town meetings steadily waned, and so about 20 years ago, the legislature approved a new option called Senate Bill 2. This approach split the process into two parts. First, a deliberative session to debate the issues and draft warrant articles on those matters, and then a voting day where residents have their say. SB 2 passed in 1995, and several dozen towns rushed to adopt it, mostly larger southern-tier communities. Since then, a few towns, year by year, have turned to SB 2. But every meeting season, there's a lot of discussion about this, including among those who've made the switch about possibly switching back. Today in The Exchange, the future of town meeting, what this is all about, why the change, and whether it matters in terms of budgets and the democratic process. Join us. Why do you think we've seen this change in attitude in certain New Hampshire towns? Does your community have traditional town meeting or SB2, and does it work well or not? And what does this partial shift, SB2, say about the way our state may be changing? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Joining us from the North Country is Edith Tucker. She's a reporter for the Coos County Democrat and the Berlin Reporter, both owned by Salmon Press. And Edith, welcome back. Great to have you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Also with us, Rick Broussard, longtime editor of New Hampshire Magazine. And Rick, thanks for being with us. Good to see you.
It's my pleasure.
And Dan Barrick is here, deputy director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, which has been crunching some of the numbers about town meeting. And Dan, good to see you too. Welcome.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, and Rick, I want to start with you. You know, for some Granite Staters, town meeting fulfills a role beyond just approving budgets, approving the fire truck, approving the warrant articles. What does it mean to people beyond that, you know, function of government?
Well, it's a big part of town identity. It's the club that you join when you move to town. And at least that's the way it historically was. It was your, you know, it was sort of like your debut. You would go to town meeting and you'd become a part of the scheme of things there. And, you know, that the whole decision-making process that people, that the towns have gone through is really a decision between, I mean, some people view it as sort of that Paul Bunyan, you know, against the, or it was John Henry and the steam hammer, you know, it's the romantic tradition of a mental contact sport of debate being replaced by you know, a checkbox approach, a more digitized or virtualized and more modern approach to governance. But it isn't just that cold. There's also the sanctity of the ballot, that which is another great American tradition. So it's almost like two great American traditions are in conflict in the whole question of whether SB2 or town meeting is the right way to go. But it definitely is a touchstone for what your town is what your town meeting or your form of governance is, and how you interact with it.
Well, it's interesting to hear you say that because, again, to look at it on paper, it just looks like, all right, you pick this form of government or that form. But you're saying it's a lot more than that, Rick.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's how we approach the future. And there are many traditions which are finding new traction in this new age. I mean, a lot of what we thought we would dispense with is becoming more trendy. I hate to compare town meeting to vinyl records, but that's perhaps not a bad example. It's, you know, there's better sound. There's more the aesthetics of it are useful. They're meaningful and functional. So,
Edith, what do you think? More than just budgets and whether we need a new fire truck, a cultural touchstone?
Oh, I think it is a cultural touchstone in small towns in the North Country, where people not only vote on and discuss the budgets, which of course are very important, but they talk about who goes to senior meals and whether they should support it. why this is important to support it. They talk about when the next rabies clinic is. Various announcements are made. People talk at some kinds of breaks, or they have a pre-town meeting supper where money is raised for a good cause across the street, that kind of thing that draws a town together and lets newcomers become ultimately part of that town as they interact with old-timers.
Well, and that's another question I wanted to ask you, Edith. Is this sort of split that we're going to get into more detail about in just a minute, but is this split, those who attend town meeting, those who don't, is it a newcomer versus long-timer phenomenon that if you're relatively new to New Hampshire, you're just not going to bother, or what do you see?
Oh, that I really don't know. I think that people don't expect you when you've just been in town a year or two to stand up and speak. So to that extent, it is a little bit of a club. People think you should, you know, pay your dues and learn how things work in town before you jump right in. But I think the interaction, particularly after a long winter, cold winter this year, is very pleasant to see. A lot of it has to do with what kind of moderator a town has, whether they know how to encourage people to speak but not speak too long, not to overhash something that really is going to go through. And a good moderator makes a huge difference.
Well, and Dan Barrick, give us the landscape. At this point, how many Granite Staters live in places under traditional town meeting? How many live in places operating under this new SB2 model that we'll talk about? And how many live under some other kind of governance?
It's actually a pretty even split. So you've got about one-third, one-third, one-third. One-third of residents live in a town with that governs itself with the traditional town meeting. One-third have adopted the SB2 form. And about a third live in cities or very large towns that use a city council, mayor, or board of aldermen type form where there's really, there's an elective branch that handles all those sorts of matters. But in terms of the actual number of towns, as you mentioned, there's only about 67, 68 towns in New Hampshire that have adopted SB2, and they tend to be the larger towns in the southern tier, Hillsborough, Rockingham County, towns like Hudson, Salem.
So big towns with a lot of people.
Big towns with a lot of people where either the process of traditional town meeting became too unwieldy because there's just too many people, or, there might be folks who commute long distances to Boston area, so the notion of spending a whole day or a whole evening as a requirement of participating in, voting on your town budget, that's where we've tended to see the adoption. But in terms of actual residents, it's a pretty three-way split between those three forms of government.
Yeah, and give us a little bit more, if you could, Dan, on that shift and some of the factors behind it. 20 years ago, the Senate passes this bill, SB2, and it says to towns, okay, you can do it this other way, this quicker, more convenient way. You touched on it, Dan, but give us a little bit more about some of the demographic and cultural factors that were behind that move.
Sure. So, in a nutshell, what SB2 allows a town to do is divide into the process of running itself. So the traditional town meeting, as Rick laid out, you've often got a long meeting in which the debate takes place over several hours, but the votes occur right there, right immediately afterwards. So you could debate the town budget or purchasing a new fire engine, but you've got to be present at that debate in order to cast a vote.
And you've got to stay till midnight
as long as it takes. So, they would often be, they often are all day on a Saturday or late into the evening. What SB2 allows a town to do is to essentially divide that into two pieces, the debate and deliberative piece and the voting piece. So so the debate would happen on one day and folks could make amendments to articles and change the budget and so forth. But the actual vote would happen in a traditional ballot. So if you live in that town and you want to vote, you don't have to sit through a day-long meeting. You can just stop by the town office on your way to work and cast your vote. So we know that pretty fundamental shift in the process, and it divides into two the overall process. One of the things that we don't have a real firm handle on is what impact SB2 had on the outcomes of town governments. So does it lead to more efficient budgeting? Does it lead to higher spending, less spending? We at the center have done some look at that. One of my colleagues, Dennis DeLay, has analyzed per capita spending and spending growth in SB2 towns and non-SB2 towns And it looks like there's really not that much of a difference in spending patterns between the two categories of town, about the same per capita spending and about the same spending growth over say, the last decade. That said, you know, within an individual town, there may be a lot of differences in terms of how they govern themselves in an SB2 format versus not. But in terms of fundamental changes in how much towns spend, how they spend that money, it doesn't seem like there's been huge fundamental shift when a town goes to SB2 versus remaining with a traditional town meeting format.
Let me invite our listeners to join us and then have another question for you all. The number here on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Join us as we talk about town governance and some of the shifts we've seen just in the past 20 years. As Dan Barrick tells us, about a third of New Hampshire towns are governed by traditional town meeting, another third governed by this newer method called SB2. Which method does your town use, and does it work well or not? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. So Rick Broussard, you know, Dan described this newer model, and every year a couple towns seem to switch to it or at least debate it. There is this feeling, though, among sort of traditional town meeting supporters that this is not just more convenient. It's changing the nature of the democratic process, that people aren't there for that whole discussion and debate. What do you think?
Yeah, I'd be curious, not just the effects on spending, but on participation. And I think one of the ideas was that there would be more people participating in the process if you made it easier. You made it, you know, there's a deliberative session and then there's a vote. But from what my vestigial understanding of this is that that's not really been the case either. I don't know, Dan, is that
participating meaning in terms of people voting.
Actually voting, people actually participating in the process of deciding on the fire engine?
My organization does not have a sense of that. But you're right, one of the main goals was to increase participation, but participation in the actual vote casting side,
right.
not necessarily
in the deliberative
side.
Right.
So and you know, you raise a point that this in this debate over traditional town meeting versus SB2, it's sort of two cultural traditions in competition. It's almost, you could almost think of it as two forms of democracy in competition. What do you think is the most important form of the democratic process? Is it the public debate and the dialogue and the discussion that happens in public, or is it making it easier for the largest number of people to actually cast a vote?
All right.
And depending on which form you use, there are two different streams there.
And we'll definitely pick up on that in just a moment. Let's check in now with our March Fund Drive.
It's NHPR's fundraiser, NHPR, New Hampshire Public Radio. Radio made right here in the Granite State for Granite Staters. Of course, we do carry programs we don't make, like All Things Considered Morning Edition Here and Now, Radio Lab. But being New Hampshire Public Radio means serving Granite Staters, which means making radio right here in the state. The Exchange is a great example of that, what public radio New Hampshire style sounds like.
And what do you think the implication is? I mean, this is sort of the big question overhanging this whole thing. What's the implication of not having a civically educated society?
I think it's hard.
How does that play out?
I think it's hard to run a democracy unless you've got effectively run a democracy, participate in a democracy, which requires participation by definition, if you don't understand what in the world it is you're participating in.
NHPR is a community of radio makers and radio listeners. You tune in to be entertained, informed, and inspired, and your membership makes New Hampshire Public Radio possible. Here's how you can help.
You just pick up your phone and call 1-888-805-6477. You can help online, too, by giving at nhpr.org. Our goal this hour, $1,300 we need to raise to stay on track for this March fund drive. How many of those dollars can you cover? Well, for most folks, that's usually about $5 or $10 per month. Give what you can now at 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org. I'm NHPR Program Director Michael Rathke here with our news director, Sarah Ashworth.
And we have some exciting news this morning. We have a big drawing that is now underway. This is one of our biggest. We are giving away a week-long trip for two to London. This includes round-trip airfare for two, a six-night stay near Piccadilly Circus, and a tour, a behind-the-scenes look at the BBC DC's Broadcast Center. This trip is donated in part by Milne Travel American Express. And when you make a donation right now, you're going to be entered into this big drawing. So make your pledge now. It takes just a couple of minutes at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477.
Radio, at its most basic level, is really just a conversation between two people. Oftentimes, you're just a fly on the wall listening to that conversation. And when the conversations are as interesting as the ones you hear on NHPR, it's exciting to be a fly on the wall. But when the conversation is a subject that is near and dear to your heart, you'd like to be able to add to the conversation with your own questions and comments. That's one of the reasons why we started the exchange here on NHPR, and your support makes the exchange possible. Give now. Give as generously as you can when you call 1-888-805-6477 or donate at nhpr.org.
And the goal here is to raise $1,300 in the next 40 minutes or so. That allows us to stay on track for the overall goal of this fund drive, which we're hoping to wrap up in just a couple of days. You can help us do that when you make your pledge right now. It takes just a couple of minutes. You can call. You can go online. You can look at all of our thank you gifts online when you make your pledge. That address is nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477.
And you want to call right now, 1-888-805-6477, or go to our website right now, nhpr.org, because when you do that, you're automatically going to be entered into a week-long trip for two to London. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and includes a tour of the BBC state-of-the-art facility. All you have to do is call to enter to win. But while you're on the phone or on the web, we hope you'll take a couple of extra minutes because, again, we can't stress this point enough. It's your support that makes programs like The Exchange possible here on NHPR. Call 1-888-805-6477 or give at nhpr.org.
And no matter what level you give at, you're going to be entered into that exciting London trip giveaway. If you can give at the $5 a month level, we'll send you an NHPR notebook as well. You can choose the amount that's right for you, set up a sustaining membership, or you pick the amount that is right for you to come out of your bank account or off of your credit card each month. You can set that up at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477. And thank you.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 924. Good morning. Winter storm warning remains in effect in Coos Carroll and Grafton counties till 11 this morning. Winter weather advisory in effect until 11 this morning for the rest of the state except Hillsborough and Rockingham counties. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, during our March fund drive. And support also comes to us from the law firm of Raff, Young & Pignatelli, serving the business and nonprofit community, national impact, uniquely New Hampshire, on the web at rafflaw.com. From the University of New Hampshire's online Master of Social Work program, now accepting applications for August admission, mswonline.unh.edu. And True North Network's customized IT solutions from cloud to on-site managed services, all backed with attentive customer service, straight answers, bright solutions, truenorthnetworks.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in Exchange, at the tail end of town meeting season, we're looking at town governance and how it's evolving. We invite you to join us now with your questions and comments. Does your town have a traditional meeting or the newer SB2 model? What do you think works better for your community? 1-800-892-6477 is the number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like. NHPR Exchange, all one word. Our guests are Dan Barrick with the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies, Rick Broussard, editor of New Hampshire Magazine, and Edith Tucker, reporter for the Coos County Democrat and the Berlin Reporter, owned by Salmon Press. And all of you, let's go to our listeners. Charlie's waiting in Whitefield. Hi, Charlie. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, and hi to Edith. I always enjoy reading your articles. We just got done with town meeting, of course, and I really enjoy the debates that go on. I feel that those who don't show up shouldn't get to vote because they're not going to be informed voters. But there were several contentious issues during which everybody in the room became informed voters. And that's what I really like about town meeting is you get to see everybody. It's part of what makes you feel like a community, even though we really don't get the attendance that maybe we should.
Can you talk about that a little bit, Charlie? Because we've heard that one of the reasons people started switching to SB 2 20 years ago was that attendance was just getting ridiculously low. What's it been like in Whitefield?
We have 2,100 people, and I think we had 139.
Okay, yeah.
Show up. I mean, so we're probably getting less than 10%. But our voting during the day, we got somewhere in the ballpark of 400 votes voting for Joe Kenny or for the executive council position and things like that. We got about 350. Again, not great turnout, but I feel like I enjoy the process of getting to know, because I don't have time and I'm certainly not the interest to go to every select board meeting. And to learn all about every topic, but you can learn about it in one fell swoop over the course of a couple hours.
Okay. Charlie, thanks for calling in. You know, Rick Broussard, this gets to something we were talking about before the break, the idea that, you know, we talk about democracy and what's the best form. It seems to me there's a couple pieces. There's the learning, the sitting down, the deliberating, and then there's the voting. So there's sort of two pieces, and this is the conflict here.
Yeah, and to speak to the learning, I've witnessed this. I used to cover town meetings as a reporter, and you go and you see people actually change their minds there, or they come away aware of something. I'm on a few nonprofit boards, and I'm one of those people who I don't read the minutes or the agenda, you know, until I'm sitting there at the table, and then I kind of, because I'm on a bunch of them, and that's when I get informed, is when, you know, the rubber meets the road. There you are in the session, and you have to suddenly bone up on it. And so you really start to pay attention then. And I don't think voters do that as well. If you have a great newspaper and somebody's keeping you up to date on the issues, you might have an informed vote. But the idea of making these critical decisions, you really are like a member of government at that moment. You're deciding on budget matters, on whether or not to do important things. You really need to be deeply informed, and it's an opportunity to do that. Whereas the vote is a more superficial approach to governance. There's just no two ways around it.
Edith, our caller is from the North Country, and he says he enjoys your North Country reporting. What's the preferred form of governance in your area today? We heard earlier from Dan Barrick that in the southern tier, it's more about SB2.
There's SB2 in the town of Carroll, also known as Twin Mountain, which works very, very well there, I think because a lot of people go to the first session. They do actually do the debate. Presentations are made about the things that are coming up. And then they, of course, have a vote on town meeting day that's a ballot vote. So that's where the SB2 really seems to work very, very well. We also have SB2 at White Mountains Regional School District, which is made up of five towns. And they get a pretty big turnout. And it makes it so that a town that has a regular town meeting also has a ballot vote when people are voting for the officers during the day that includes the school budgets. So you can compare. In Lancaster, 700 people voted on the SB2 school matters, and only 100 or so went to the town meeting.
So is that good or bad, Edith? What do you think? Yeah, so 700 people voted. That's pretty good for a small town, but only 100 people.
It's pretty good for a small
town. Yeah.
So if you can get people to go to the first session, if you can organize it so that it is informative and not viewed as something that should be done quickly or as a rubber stamp, and this is where the moderator makes such a big difference. They've had wonderful moderators in the town of Carroll. And the moderator runs that first session. And the selectmen don't take questions, you know, as a personal affront. There's a whole series of personality traits that play into how successful different kinds of governance are. It's a very personal human interchange.
Well,
so first sessions that can run like regular town meetings are very successful.
Do you want to jump back in? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Edith. Yeah.
Oh, the school first session tends to be filled with school employees, and so that interchange really doesn't take place. And there's quite a contrast
Yeah, I would like to step in because the other element to what you're just talking about, Edith, is the fact that you get to know the cast of characters personally as opposed to just as, you know, quotes in a newspaper. Or I had the opportunity to meet a guy named Richard Kennedy, known by, you know, Stretch Kennedy, because I covered the Hopkinton town meeting. He gently lectured me on the Constitution, and this was back before the Constitution was cool. And that was just part of the experience of going to town meeting. I learned so much, and I met so many important people who have helped me or have influenced my my life in New Hampshire ever since that I never would have met if I hadn't had that experience.
All right. Let's take some more calls, some emails here, too, that I want to share with you. The number here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. I also want to remind you that it's NHPR's March Fund Drive. You can do your part for NHPR right now with a contribution of any amount. Go to nhpr.org and thanks. And let's go next to Lee, where Tom is on the line. Hi, Tom. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
I enjoy the town meeting, and I've been part of New Hampshire town meeting for a number of years, but I supported the SB2 when it came to Lee, because I really feel as though people need representative government, and that only happens when people are voting. So the deliberative sessions are fine, and they're informative. I do think that most people are smart enough so that if they read the ballot issues, the warrant articles, they can make their mind up as to, as to which way to vote.
What about the opportunity, Tom? Rick Broussard mentioned this earlier, and that's why I'm throwing it at you. The opportunity to change your mind if you're at the deliberative session based on the discussion that you hear.
I think that's important, but then again, if you attend the deliberative sessions, then you have the opportunity to vote for or against something as it comes up when you go to the ballot box. So I do think the deliberative sessions are important, but I don't like the good old boy control that a lot of people have over the system when you've got a town of, I don't know what it is, 4,600 people here. And then people actually end up, you get a couple dozen people that stand up and try and sway things. And I understand that, you know, we're not a town that has a lot of money, but at the same time, and I think the selectmen do a wonderful job, but I do think that it's just important for everybody to be recognized.
Interesting. So some people maybe feel intimidated by the powers that be, the good old boys.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I grew up in a town next door here that does not have that has the regular town meeting. And I don't think that that town has that problem necessarily, but I do think that if the problem exists, it has to be recognized and people have to kind of do what they have to do to change it.
Well, Tom, thanks a lot for calling in. Dan Barrick, what do you think? You know, some people don't feel comfortable going to town meeting and voting publicly.
Well, this is one of the questions that arises a lot about when people debate SB2 versus traditional town meeting. It's this question about participation rates. So one of the goals of SB2 was to increase participation among those residents who would actually vote on matters, who would actually, you know, cast the ballot, because they wouldn't have to be obliged to sit through a day-long meeting.
Or stand up and be counted as yes or no when they felt uncomfortable.
Give a public vote. But the flip side is, so if you have a deliberative session, which is effectively, you know, more of a debating process as opposed to people taking action, does that decrease participation? Because, you know, folks, it's a lot to ask folks to come to a meeting where they're just going to debate a topic but not vote. So that, you know, you do hear concern about that SB2 decreases participation at the deliberative session because it's you know, you're not actually taking action. And, occasionally you'll hear anecdotes about, you know, this year in the town of Allenstown had at their school district meeting, they have SB2 at the deliberative session. Allenstown is a town of about 4,000, 4,500 people. About 70 people showed up for the deliberative session.
Wow, not much.
And they voted by a two-vote margin to cut $1 million out of a $9.5 million school budget without really any thinking about how that would come about. A lot of people saw that as rather drastic. That's what went to the voters, that you know, $1 million less. But what happened is, in the weeks between the deliberative session and the actual voting day, there was what you might call a sort of a traditional campaign with bumper stickers and
people
saying,
out.
Yeah, we need to restore that cut. And I think over 1,000 people ended up voting that day. So, you know, you had 1,000 people voting versus 70 at the deliberative session. But a lot can happen at those deliberative sessions, you know.
They can be hijacked. That's the concern by certain interests.
Well, I mean, it's not – I mean, anybody's free to go. But they they may tend to attract more passionate folks because, you know, like any smaller, a session where you're not actually voting, the people who are going to be willing to spend the day at a deliberative session may have more of a vested interest in what's going on there. So, you know, you've got that divide between, you know, the deliberative session where changes can be made, budgets can be rewritten, may tend to have lower participation, but at the actual voting day, the goal of SB2 is to increase the participation among the actual voters.
Well, and our caller, Tom from Lee, and Tom, thanks a lot for joining us, talked about SB2 in Lee. He likes it. Got a long email here from David in Lee, who's on the select board there. And David, I won't read the whole thing, but he makes a lot of arguments in favor of SB2. He says the tradition of town meeting is preserved by retaining the positive community spirit of the event. The only difference, David says, with an SB2 is that it allows all voters to vote a few weeks later via private ballot. He says SB2 is not about getting rid of town meeting. It's about updating town meeting and maintaining a fair democratic process. He also says SB2 enables equality and fairness by including voters who work out of state, are traveling, or in the military, retirees, away for the winter, and so forth. And he says it provides a strong incentive for the governmental body to communicate about all the issues and warrant articles, which David says the town of Lee has produced a much better informed elective. So there's some arguments in favor. Edith Tucker, what do you think?
Well, my mind is swirling here. I do think that we need to mention that SB2 does have a default position if someone, quote-unquote, hijacks and does a $1 million cut, as they did in the town that one of the speakers mentioned. That is that there's a default budget, which is the same budget as the previous year plus any contracts. And so even if someone does radically reduce the budget at the first deliberative session, there is a default. You can defeat the new budget, and a second one goes in that's agreed to by the law of SB2 to protect what has happened in the past. So that's, I think, a big help. And I think that probably people in that town will go to the first deliberative session next year. You know, we all learn where we need to put our time if we want to be part of government. And I don't know how. I think in small towns, really, the pure traditional town meeting is just perfect. In the medium-sized towns, I think it's much more difficult.
David, thanks for that email. And we're going to take a short break and check in with our March Fund Drive.
I love the focus on the exchange of local issues and getting a really serious perspective on that. I spend a lot of my time getting news from the internet, which tends to focus on national or international issues, and having something like The Exchange really gives me a chance to stop and have an in-depth look at what's happening with local politics and society, or at least a local perspective on a national or broader issue. That's really valuable. Laura Kanoy's interviewing is first class. She's right on that level of quality journalism.
Broderick Lang is a listener and member of NHPR from Manchester.
And getting an in-depth look at local issues, that's what you are getting today on our program, The Exchange. Good morning, I'm Sarah Ashworth, and this is our March Fund Drive. We are asking for your financial support of programming like The Exchange this morning. We have a goal of $1,000 left to raise here in the next 20 minutes or so. That's you and about 9 other people making a pledge at the $100 level. If you can do that, if you can commit to helping The Exchange now, call 1-888- 805-6477 or go to nhpr.org. And here's Michael Rathke with more.
And when you call right now, 1-888-805-6477 or go online right now at nhpr.org, you're going to be automatically entered into a really, really, really cool drawing. It's a trip to London. Round-trip airfare for two, six-night stay at a four-star hotel near Piccadilly Circus, and also included in this package, a tour of BBC's state-of-the-art broadcast house. This trip is donated in part by Milne Travel American Express. Again, all you have to do to enter the drawing is call 1-888-805-6477 or enter at nhpr.org. While you're on the phone or on the web, we also hope you'll take a couple of extra minutes and show your support for The Exchange here on NHPR.
Show your support for The Exchange. Every day the program tackles a wide breadth of topics. Today's discussion is it's extremely local. It's as local as you can get down to the town level. Next week the program is going to look at the situation that's unfolding in the Ukraine and talk to some Granite Staters who have ties to that region. Every day you're getting something diverse from programming on The Exchange. You help support those programs when you make a pledge right now. You can do that at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477.
And we're halfway to this hour's goal, $1,000 yet to raise in the next 18 minutes. Now, we've had a great morning so far. Thanks if you've already made a contribution during our March fund drive. But if you haven't gotten around to making that all-important call or that all-important web donation yet, I'm speaking to you, my friend. We need to hear from you next in order to reach this hour's goal of $1,000 by 10 o'clock. Keeps us on good pace for our March fund drive overall when you call 1-888-805-6477 or give at nhpr.org.
And give now because one of our biggest prizes is coming up and you could win it. The giveaway is underway now. It's for a trip for two to London. This includes round-trip airfare. You get a six-night stay near Piccadilly Circus and you get a behind-the-scenes look at the BBC's Broadcast Centre. While you're there, of course, you can take in all the sights and the history that London has to offer. This is a big giveaway, and when you make a pledge right now, you are going to be entered into winning this trip for two to London. Make your pledge now. Any amount counts. Do it at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477.
Think about making a sustaining gift right now of whatever amount works best for you on a monthly basis, $5 a month, $10 a month, even $50 a month or $100 a month. And it all adds up. We'll charge your credit card or your bank account on a monthly basis. It's a great way for you to provide important ongoing support to NHPR. Call now. Give as generously as you can. $900 to go now. 1-888-805-6477. NHPR.org.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 944. Good morning. A winter storm warning remains in effect in Coos, Carroll, and Grafton counties till 11 this morning. Winter weather advisory in effect until 11 this morning for the rest of the state except Hillsborough and Rockingham counties. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, during our March fund drive, and support also comes to us from Home Healthcare Hospice and Community Services, offering the opportunity to talk about end-of-life planning at the Conservation Cafe, March 26. Information at hcsservices.org. From Heritage Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, Electric, now offering electrical repair and service, in addition to furnaces, boilers, and water heaters, online at justcallheritage.com. And from Cedar Crest Center for Children with Disabilities, comprehensive medical care and education for children with complex medical and developmental needs, ages infant to 21, cedarcrestcenter.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Join us for that tomorrow. Today in The Exchange, we're talking about town meetings and how they've evolved in the past two decades with new models of town governance. The SB2 model is what we've been looking at this hour. Join us with your thoughts, questions, comments, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Post a comment on our Facebook page if you'd like, NHPR Exchange, all one word. And Dan Barrick, Rick Broussard, Edith Tucker, some more comments from our listeners that are coming in, including one from Sue in Bow, who says, I live in a town that voted down SB2 about half a dozen times. It was promoted by SB2 supporters as a more democratic process because more people show up to vote when they have an entire day to do so, and one can vote by absentee ballot. However, Sue says, it is far less democratic than town meeting for this reason. The deliberative session in SB2 towns typically have very low attendance, yet the voters who attend the deliberative session have control over what ends up on the ballot on voting day. Therefore, a very small number of people have control over what is voted on. And she also raises the Allenstown example that you raised earlier, Dan Barrick. What do you think, Rick Broussard, this idea of, you know, what is the democratic process? Is it better when more people show up to vote? Is it better when slightly more people show up to deliberate? I'd love your thoughts on Sue's email.
Yeah. Well, the American political process has an element of theater to it. And we appreciate that, and we recognize it in our national campaigns. And what you get in the local election is more like vaudeville. But it is definitely a theatrical thing. And so I think that that may trump a lot of these issues if what you're looking at is the character of the town. If what you're looking at is enhancing the character of a community, you have to be a part of the play, and you have to. As I was saying earlier, you have to know who the players are. You have to know what their roles are, and where you fit into all of that. And I don't think that happens in a deliberative session. It happens in an encounter that the town meeting provides. It's almost, you know, it's like a sweat lodge, you know, for 6 hours where you're stuck with these people and you have to come to grips. And
you're not making it sound very appealing.
Well, because it's not. It is and it isn't. It is not appealing. It's like castor oil. It's good for you. Well, maybe castor oil isn't good for you. There's probably a better example. There's one of those things that doesn't taste good, but that's good for you. That's my personal opinion, but I live in a town where I don't have to deal with that.
I live in Concord, so it's a city council form.
Because I was fortunate enough to be a reporter and get to experience this, so I can't really speak for those poor towns.
Let's take another call. This is Jay in Salem. Hi, Jay. Thanks for hanging on. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. I have experienced Salem both in the town meeting form and in the SB2 form. I've lived here for 11 years, having moved from a small, unincorporated town in Wisconsin. And I find that this town meeting form, in either version, is very difficult to use in the town the size that Salem is. And it is inefficient. It labors under cronyism and being hijacked, that some of the concerns that were voiced by other commentary that's already been made. And I really think that there needs to be consideration for once a municipality has reached a certain critical mass in its population, that it moves to something different, where you have professional form of governance, where you bring in a mayor or a city manager and a council that's a representation that, if you don't like what they're doing, you can vote them out of office, but you don't need to be saddled with page after page after page of warrants that are so arcanely worded that very few can decipher what they truly mean.
So, Jay, are you in Salem under SB2 now? Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Yes.
Yes, and you think it works a lot better for your town?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, when we had the town meeting, the moderator would basically run roughshod over people. So somebody came up to make comment on things, and I witnessed this personally.
Wow.
Seeing them get in line, stand in line, they wait for their opportunity to speak, and they have a few moments to speak. But obviously there's some question or concern that is further raised by the discussion, but their time has been shut off because they had their one shot to speak. And the next person in line moves up. And often there's honestly, they put shills in line to come up to close off debate. And then they close it off and nobody gets anything satisfied. And you have a gymnasium overflowing with, you know, 1,500 people who are leaving very disgruntled and dissatisfied by the way things were operating.
Wow. So you've been frustrated with both forms, Jay.
Yes, yes. I think both forms are inefficient for a town the size of Salem.
Wow.
I think some towns that are as large as it is that this represents. I mean, if you have a smaller place that, you know, you could fill up the population of the place in the local church and the pews, then maybe it would work for deliberating what their budgets are. But when you get to places like this, the form of governance and is completely outmoded for the size of the population and the things it needs to consider.
Well, Jay, good to hear from you. Yeah, and Dan Barrick, this gets to what something you said earlier in the program, that these big towns really did just start to feel like it was unwieldy.
Yeah, it's an interesting question about how does a town figure out what's the right process that it wants to govern itself. And since the legislature enacted the SB2 format in 1995, we saw a big rush in the first few years, 40 or 50 towns or so adopting it within the first few years. Since then, you've seen maybe one, two towns at most each year in the last few years adopt it. But it seems as though towns have achieved a sort of equilibrium. Those towns that feel like this is the most efficient way to govern themselves have gone that way. And we've even seen, as one of the your emailers mentioned, in some towns there's been vote after vote after vote to adopt SB2 and it hasn't passed. It's a pretty high threshold. A town, three-fifths of the town, you need a three-fifths majority vote to adopt SB2. So a town really has to want to adopt this. It's not a simple majority. But I think we've sort of achieved that equilibrium where, as we've said, the larger towns, and that generally speaking means southern, southeastern towns have adopted it, and those with smaller populations and maybe more of a sense of some of the points that Rick raised about the tradition and the social and cultural benefits of town meeting have stuck with that format.
Yeah, it's interesting. And Edith, disheartening to hear his story about how, despite the image of town meeting as the purest form of democracy, everybody gets their say, Norman Rockwell painting, and so on and so forth. Sometimes people feel bullied at town meeting, it sounds like, Edith. This is all about the moderator and the leadership that you mentioned earlier.
I think that is really a critical part of it. Excuse me. I also think that people are using the internet more. Towns that have good websites and are publishing their minutes of selectmen's meetings. There are a lot of ways of communicating, other than newspapers. And I think we all know that's a double-edged sword for people who are reporters. But the towns that are reaching out to voters and thinking about them through the year, I think, are better towns than those who sort of say, oh, my golly, we have town meeting coming up, and think of it as a win-lose situation rather than a win-win situation. And that's really human attitudes, and that's pretty hard to legislate, isn't it?
Here's an interesting email from Don in Londonderry. He says, Londonderry went from town meeting, filling two schools and lasting 2 days, to deliberative sessions of maybe 700 and sometimes no quorum. We all griped back then, but now we see how wrong we were to switch. People new to town have no idea that the community is built while waiting to vote during the polls will stay open for 1 hour times. We need to bring back town meeting. So there's Don in Londonderry, Dan Barrick, saying, I wish we could move back. And yet your numbers have shown and state numbers have shown that once a town goes a new route, it really doesn't tend to go back.
I'm not aware of any towns voting to repeat, go from SB2 back to the traditional. I don't know if that speaks to folks being satisfied or just, that SB2 becomes a tradition as well about how the governance of the town runs.
Well, thanks for the email. And I want to thank everybody who emailed. I've got a couple more that I won't have time to share with you. But Rick Broussard, last question for you. When a town goes the SB2 route, there's always lamenting that it's not that people don't have time. It's that they don't care anymore. Mm. I'm assuming no one has done a UNH poll on this question. Is it that you really don't have time or that you really don't want to spend your limited free time that way? If you could survey people, what do you think they would say, Rick?
Well, I hope they wouldn't say what Groucho Marx said, which was, I don't want to belong to any club except me as a member. Because that there is a little bit of that. The dues are too high to be involved in this. But I don't know.
Is it that people truly don't have time, or is it that we have changed culturally and we're just not that interested?
That's the question. Yeah, I think we're definitely changing culturally and technologically and all of those other ways. But I just think that doesn't mean that – I don't think town meeting will ever go. I think that there will always be a few towns that preserve that tradition sort of as a time capsule for the future. And who knows, maybe someday when the internet has changed everything – it'll become the way that everybody does it again, you know, because suddenly it'll be the only chance to get out of your little pods and interact with other
like
humanoids.
Like vinyl records coming back.
Yes, just like vinyl records.
All right. Well, all of you, it's been great to talk to you. And I can tell there's a lot of interest in this topic from our listeners. Thank you all very much for joining us.
Bye.
This is The Exchange on NHPR, checking in now with our Munchfadarif.
Good morning, and the work of Laura Kanoy and The Exchange. It's all made possible thanks to you when you contribute to the March Fund Drive here at NHPR. In these next few moments, we hope you'll step forward and do just that by calling 1-888-805-6477 or give at nhpr.org. Getting very close to the goal for this hour, $700 to go in the next 4 minutes. We can get there. Maybe even your gift right now will put us over the top for this hour. But for that to happen, we need to hear from you right now. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
And one of our biggest drawings ever is coming up, and you now have a chance to be in it. We are giving away a week-long trip for two to London. This includes round-trip airfare and a six-night stay near Piccadilly Circus. You get a behind-the-scenes tour of the BBC Broadcast Centre, and then the rest of the time you can take in the sights and the history, everything that London has to offer. You can be entered into that drawing when you make a pledge at any amount right now. Call 1-888-805-6477 or make that pledge at nhpr.org.
Coming up in just a few moments, the Diane Rehm Show, and it's part of the morning block, as we call it here at NHPR. 3 solid hours of great programs, talk and interview programs, The Exchange at 9 o'clock, of course, and the Diane Rehm Show from 10 until noon. Compelling guests, compelling topics day in and day out. And the best part of it is you can be a part of the conversation because the lines are open, the web is open for you to make your comments and ask your questions. So support these great programs now, both The Exchange and The Diane Rehm Show, with your call at 1-888-805-6477 or give online at nhpr.org.
And we still have $700 to raise here in the next few minutes of The Exchange. That is really you and about 6 other people making a contribution at the $100 level. If you can be one of those people right now, make your pledge by calling 1-888-805-6477, or you can make that pledge and look at all of our thank you gifts as well at nhpr.org.
Not only can you look at the thank you gifts at nhpr.org, but when you go to our website right now or call 1-888-805-6477, you are automatically going to be entered into a really great drawing, a trip for two to London, round-trip airfare, a six-night stay at a 4-star hotel near Piccadilly Circus, and for those of us in broadcasting, but this is our favorite part, a tour of BBC's state-of-the-art facility known as their Broadcast House. We'd like to thank Milne Travel American Express for donating this trip in part, and we'd like to thank you when you call and enter and hopefully support The Exchange right now at NHPR, 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
And a pledge of any amount gets you entered into this big drawing. If you can make a pledge of $60 or break that into $5 a month payments, we'll also send you NHPR's notebook. This is one of our new thank you gifts. It's a nice classic notebook. It's green hardcover. It's a journal, really. And it's got the NHPR logo on the front of it. And we'll send you that with a pledge of $5 a month right now. You can do that by going to nhpr.org or calling 1-888-805-6477.
Coming up, news headlines from NPR and then today's installment of the Diane Rehm Show. You have a couple of minutes, though, to get your call or your web gift in now. $700 yet to go. If you're on the phone or online right now, your contribution will help towards this hour's goal, which we need to reach in order to stay on track for our March fund drive. 1-888-805-6477, nhpr.org. Again, when you go online or call that number now, you are automatically entered into the drawing, a trip for two to London. Who can pass up that opportunity? Get online right now, nhpr.org, or give us a call. Again, the number is 1-888-805-6477. Thank you so much for your support of NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio. The Diane Rehm Show is next. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, during our March Fund Drive and from Vineyard Brands, importers of La VFM wines from Fami Parin of the Southern Rhone Valley. Available in New Hampshire State liquor stores on the web at rhone.net. And from the Brattleboro Retreat, where people with mental health and addiction problems go to make new starts, online at brattlebororetreat.com.